everybody, welcome to a brand new episode of the SmackDown Summary here on Inside the Ropes, episode number 44. We've always been doing this a year in July. I'm Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by Sondra, Ruth, Wesseldyke, Reinstein. Take a drink if you are playing along the Facebook community for the drinking game, which apparently every time I say Sondra's full name is a drinking opportunity.
Is it? Well, let me just take a drink then, because I do have a beer right next to me, as is my want.
As is your need.
Yes, exactly.
Quickly say, obviously, on the Raw Rundown, we played a Oasis song to commemorate Manchester with what happened there a couple of days ago. And just so everyone knows, the Goldberg event will still be going ahead as planned. I don't think Andy thinks that's going to happen, but like, yeah, that's obviously going ahead, no problem. Manchester's like a, I feel like a connection to Manchester. We've done a lot of shows with Inside the Ropes in Manchester. You know, Saunders even been there when we did Paul Heyman in Manchester.
Mm-hmm.
Manchester's a great city, really great city, and it's great to see them all kind of coming together. My mum used to take me down to Manchester when I was a kid. We would go and see like Mayhem in Manchester, and we would see No Mercy, and stuff like that. So loads of events that we would go down and see in that city. So I hope everyone's doing well, as they can be. And
I will say it is cool to see like reports of people all coming together to help each other out after this horrible situation. You know, people giving out food and like offering up their homes for people and just giving them cups of tea and giving them a place to stay or letting them use their phones or something, because a lot of people's phones had died. And I don't know, it's a really horrible situation, but it seems like Manchester has all come together to support one another, and that's cool to see, because that means that terrorism doesn't win. Terrorism isn't instilling just this fear and hatred in everyone. It's actually inspiring a sense of unity, which is the opposite of what the bad guys want. So that's been, I guess, inspiring to see in the midst of horrendous, horrendous things happening.
Yeah, agreed. So we're here to talk about SmackDown. We're here to talk about SmackDown Live. Just to let you know, obviously the month of Maharaja does mean that I have to take a punishment from every single host on this podcast. It's what I agreed to.
Stupidly. You brought this up all on your own. None of us put this upon you.
Well, I didn't think they'd be stupid enough to pull the fucking trigger. But they have, so you know. So David has asked me to be available this weekend for 1 hour. I don't know what I need to do or what is going to be involved, but that's going to be my punishment from him. Next week will be Sondra's punishment for me. The following week will be Robert's. And then maybe in the last week we'll give all of you the chance to provide me with a punishment. So we'll see. But the thing is, the way I'm going to try to talk about this podcast is, there will probably be one or two gender fucking Mahals, but I'm going to try and analyze it as best I can. I don't think it's a good idea. I still stand by everything that I've said, but I think that for podcasting purposes, it's probably going to get old very quickly if I just kind of go, ugh, to all of it. So I've tried very hard to find some good points about it this week, and I do have some good points, do have some bad points, so hopefully it will foray into a nice discussion rather than just me going, what the fuck is going on?
I think you did fairly well on the Backlash show that we did on Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, if you want to hear us talk about that from very, very different perspectives, as I'm sure you'll hear in this podcast as well. It's interesting because it seems like the people who are angry about it are so angry about it. I put up a tweet while I was watching SmackDown today just about how I stand by my opinion that I said on the Backlash show that I still find Jinder Mahal more compelling than Randy Orton at this point. And I got immediately 5 people tweeting me going, but it's terrible for this reason, but it's terrible for this reason, but it's terrible for this reason. I'm like, no, guys, I get it. Like, I do.
What's actually interesting about that is that both of you are right.
Because and I don't discount their opinion.
But you're not saying this is what I would have done. You're saying it's more interesting than Randy Orton, which I think is part of the problem. Is that if that's the barometer, you know, that's like having really bad sex and going, I'd rather just had a wank. But you'd still rather have good sex. That's what you want. saying you'd have a wank does not mean that's what you want. It just means that you'd rather have a wank than have bad sex. That's, you know, that's what I feel like a lot of it is, because still, you know, we're now on Thursday or Wednesday night, and still nobody...
But, like, WWE gave me, like, a vaginal rash or something and prevented the ability to have good sex when they made Randy Orton the champion in the first place. So it's really... There's no good option there.
Fault, yeah. And the thing is, like, again, and I'm not saying it to be, like, a high horse person or anything like that, but nobody has tweeted me yet with reasons of why they like him. All the tweets that I get are either give him a chance... Or, you know.
But I explained to you why I like the story.
That's fine. But that's going to be my point. Is I actually think there's good things about the story, but nobody is giving me information about Jinder Mahal specifically as to why he is good in this position.
Something that Dimitri on Twitter actually brought up to me. He asked a very he worded it very well. He said, are you interested in Jinder, or are you interested in what WWE is doing with Jinder? And for me, I'm definitely more interested in what WWE is doing with Jinder. I think that he's been adequate in the role, but I think that anyone in his position who is, you know, of Indian descent might have done just as well in the role if they're competent wrestlers. Like, that's the thing. I don't think Jinder is, like, a terrible wrestler. I think he's a perfectly fine wrestler. I don't think he's a super dynamic wrestler where I'm like, I really want to see a bunch of Jinder Mahal matches. But I don't think he's, I don't think he's, like, Crush bad or anything, right? So...
I don't think he's any better than Crush.
Yeah. I think he's better than Crush, for sure. He's better than Crush.
I think the only reason that he is maybe comes across a bit better than Crush is because... he's along in an era where it's different. But, like, I think if Crush had come along in this era, he'd have been able to do Jinder Mahal well. Like, I don't think that he's... Like, I'm trying to think. I mean, but then again, it's different because, like, I've seen the whole of Crush's career, so I can maybe go, oh, well, there's 3 or 4 Crush matches that I really like. Whereas there's no Jinder Mahal matches where I would go... I mean, to be fair, the Backlash...
Jinder Mahal-Seth Rollins was a good match, though.
I've never seen it.
Well... that's not my fault.
And it's not my fault you don't see all of Crush's matches. That's
no,
the point.
It's not at all.
You know, the point is that, like, if, but I think the point is that, you know, if you don't like my opinion, it's totally fine. But unless you can, like, if you can't even come at me and say, here's 3 things I like about Jinder Mahal, you can't be angry at me for not being happy that Jinder Mahal's in this position. You know, it's just one of those things. Now, we'll obviously...
Well, and I think for me, I'm not trying to convince you to be happy about it. No, I think and I'm not what I find interesting is when I state the opposite opinion on Twitter, and people are actively trying to convince me that it's a good idea, or that it's a bad idea, just like people are actively trying to convince you that it's, you know, a better idea, and, like, to come around to my perspective. I don't really think there's any convincing one side or the other, because I think both are valid. I can just tell you that I'm enjoying it for what it is, and...
I feel
by the story, and I don't even feel like someone who is better than Jinder Mahal should be in this situation, because what I like most about it is him being an undeserving champion, and I like that that's the story. So that works for me, and part of that has to do with, you know, the prestige that you place on the WWE title versus that not really bothering me as much when I watch wrestling, because we watch wrestling in very different ways.
But also, I think the fact that that's not a problem for you signifies why it is a problem for me. Because if you had come into watching WWE and you were, you know, when you started watching WWE and you were, if you were made to feel like this belt is the most important thing, and you always were, like, what I find interesting is a couple of things I want to reference during this podcast is, honestly, our Facebook community is absolutely the place to join to really get into the conversation about all this kind of stuff, because it's just so many different opinions and so many different people talking about it. Dre Warner had written a really lengthy, interesting post about the gender situation, and he talked about, you know, the belt. He talked about gender and not having a problem with gender specifically, but in a way that, you know, gender, the reign of Jinder Mahal kind of lays into the whole a belt being a prop thing than anything else. Which I think is an interesting point to bring up and to discuss. And he had mentioned that, you know, the list of Jericho was a more over prop than the WWE Championship that Jinder Mahal has. And, you know, while that's like, I mean, the Jericho thing was a babyface thing, Jinder Mahal's a heel, they are different. It's an interesting thing.
But do you
think
the anger and the vitriol at Jinder Mahal holding the championship is actually indicative of it not being a prop that's, like, not over? Because I feel like that's actually indicative of it being more over than people think. Because I think everyone being so angry that Jinder Mahal, of all people, holds it, I think that that means that it still has prestige to a lot of people. And even to me, and part of the reason it works for me is because it does have prestige, because I do want to see someone more prestigious than Jinder Mahal hold the belt. It's never been my thing where I'm just like, oh, I don't care who holds it. I do care who holds it. But part of the thing I love is that I hate that someone like Jinder Mahal is an undeserving little shit who holds this belt now when he doesn't deserve it, and he only holds it because he has the Singh brothers next to him, and he only has that, you know, he has these sniveling little salsa boys who are willing to get involved in his matches, and that's the only reason he has it. And that's what's working for me, is that it makes people so angry because he doesn't deserve it, and I like that story.
I think there's a couple I feel like sometimes for you, when everybody shits on something, you may have a tendency to kind of be like, you know, come on, we need to give it a bit of a chance. You know, like, you like an underdog kind of story. If it's a story that not everyone's like, because we've talked about before, you're not a box office person. You know, you're someone
who
likes.
No, not at all.
So the fact that everyone kind of hates this gender thing is probably going to give you more ammunition to give it a chance than anybody else that I know. And that's not to say that's why you like it, but in my history of sort of knowing you and listening to your wrestling opinions, that's something that I've noticed over time, is that you're more willing to give time and chances to things that other people are quick to dismiss. And that's not
no,
a bad
that's
thing.
Accurate. That's accurate.
And that's not a
because
bad
I
thing.
Would rather see where it goes, and I would rather actively try to enjoy what's presented to me than hate everything, I guess, because I have to watch the show.
Yeah,
like, I can't just switch it off.
But it's
so.
Like, for me, what's difficult for me is, you know, we'll get into the show, is like, you know, for you, it works for you that he's an undeserving champion, which is the part that doesn't work for me. You know, like The Miz was a guy who is like a sniveling champion, but he still worked really hard to get there. I think the thing that is going to come up over time and time again when we talk about Jinder Mahal for me is that it's the idea that he has never in his career done anything of worth to the fan base, which is an issue for me. You know, The Miz had done a lot. The Miz had, you know, won Money in the Bank. He had been US champion. He had an interesting feud with Daniel Bryan. There's tons of stuff that he'd done, whereas Jinder Mahal is someone who is literally... What bugs me is that I'm not against the story that they're telling in principle. I'm just really devastated at how they're trying to tell it, because I think it's really poor. And I think it's... If you're gonna make a storyline for India and for the Indian fans, I feel like you're doing them a disservice by telling it so poorly. If you know that you want Jinder Mahal to be that guy, and I'm not saying he had to fucking win the Royal Rumble or anything, but he couldn't have got a couple of wins at the beginning of the year. He couldn't have got the Singh brothers a couple of months ago. We couldn't have got this. It's like if you're watching a TV show and I'm trying to think of a TV show. I mean, right, okay. If you've never watched Dexter, fast forward the next 60 seconds, because I'm going to give spoilers. If you watch,
I've never seen it, but I don't plan to.
Okay.
So,
if you watch Dexter, right? Dexter is a man who kills loads of bad guys because he's got a code, right? And then his sister eventually finds out, and it's this big thing because his sister, who's also a police officer, because he is as well, finds out that he's been killing people, and she has to like deal with that and what she's going to do, right? But the reason that all works is because through different series, you've seen these characters build up and you've seen them have a relationship. So when she finally finds out, it's a story. Whereas Jinder's just one out of nowhere. There's not like a 3-month story that's come into it. You've not been able to get behind his character as a heel, which is where my issue is with it. But I think there are good parts to what happened on this show with him, and I think there's bad parts. So we will get into it. I'm banging on. But we open the show with police sirens. There's a motorcade arriving. And
for a moment, I thought the fashion police had really stepped up their game, and I got really excited. And then I was really bummed to find out that it was just for Jinder.
As you would. So they arrive. The Singh brothers get the carpet out, and they it's Jinder, and he has that kind of cartoon villain, you know, expression on his face. And so he's arrived at the arena, new WWE champion. I love, somebody had tweeted me, and I, thank you so much because it really made me laugh. Somebody sent me the video of him getting his plates made in his belt. And they were like, even his fucking plates are boring. I'm like, they are.
It uses no papyrus. The font papyrus are his side plates. It's just his name in papyrus. Vicky at NinjaPots pointed this out on Twitter, and it made me laugh so hard because it is the most Jinder Mahal thing ever. Like, papyrus of all things. Ugh. I'm a font person, so I mean, the only thing worse would be if it were in Comic Sans. Seriously.
I feel like I just need to say Times New Roman to feel under the gang. but I do. So he arrives, and there is an article that I was sent today on Cage Side Seats, and I'm really trying to find it. But somebody had sent it on our Facebook group, and it was a guy in Cage Side Seats who is... Yeah, here we are. It's called The Ultimate Guide to Understanding Jinder Mahal, and I'm going to tweet it out. And it's very interesting. And it's by a guy called, well, he's called himself Razor Ramon on Twitter, but that's not his name. He's an American Punjabi guy, and he talks about why it is working for him. And he talks about, no, sorry, he's a, yeah, he's an American, an Indian American whose family lineage started in Punjab. So he talks about some of the stuff that Jinder does and what it means, like the carpet, and the Maharaja and all that sort of stuff. So it's worth checking out. I'll tweet it out. Please do go and read it, because even me, someone who's not terribly into the idea of what's going on in its present form, I think it's worth checking out to kind of understand a lot of the stuff that he's doing. So I will tweet that out.
It was a really good article from what I saw. I haven't had time to read the whole thing, but I did skim it, and it's interesting because, I mean, I work for a Sikh family. So, and they're from the northern part of India, so they speak Hindi, they don't speak Punjabi, but a lot of the culture and everything I'm fairly familiar with, and so I don't know, I find it pretty fascinating.
So Shane McMahon kicks off the show, he comes out, he plays to the crowd a little bit, talks about, you know, Jinder being champion, he said that Randy's going to get his rematch in his hometown of St. Louis at Money in the Bank, which I'm sure David is fucking thrilled about.
David McCutcheon. Sure.
David McCutcheon, who, poor, bless David, he bought tickets for Money in the Bank, he was all excited, and the main event he's going to get is Randy versus Jinder. It makes me, it kind of gives me a little bit of inner peace that he has to endure that main event, because of all the people who have to endure that, I feel like David's the funniest one to have to.
Yeah.
So, yeah, good stuff. So it's Money in the Bank time. Obviously, Money in the Bank is coming up on June 18th. So the money.
To be fair, the rest of the pay per view. I mean, it sounds like it's going to be pretty good.
Yeah, no, I guess. I think my main problem is that everyone's fighting to get a shot against Jinder Mahal. But you know, that's apart from that.
Or whoever. I mean, the Money in the Bank contract lasts for a year. And Jinder Mahal is not going to be champion for a year.
Which Shane McMahon was quite bad at actually announcing. He kept just saying, once you win, you get a title shot whenever. And it's like, it's the next 12 months, Shane. It's the next 12 months. You need to start saying this.
I kind of want them to tell that story someday, where someone holds the briefcase for so long that the contract is coming up to expiring.
Well, it's kind of like, I think that would be interesting. Thing, right? Remember when Vince, like, he had till midnight for Punk to lose the belt? Like, I like the idea that, like, this would need to be a very, very well-told story, but is there a way to have, like, the Money in the Bank go on last in a pay-per-view, so somebody wins at, like, 10:45, and then, like, a year later to the night, they make sure and do a show where the guy can cash in at, like, 10:44?
I think that would be fascinating, right?
Yeah, it'd be good drama. So he talks about the Money in the Bank, and he brings up the participants. He brings out AJ Styles, Baron Corbin, Sami Zayn, Dolph Ziggler, and then Kevin Owens comes out, and Shane's like, you know, whoa, you're not in this. And then he says, you know, can we bring out the fifth guy? It's Nakamura. Everyone goes nuts for Nakamura. And they're all kind of there, and Kevin Owens is like, you know, why are people who lost on Sunday in the match? Which is a great point. Absolutely great point.
Why the fuck is Dolph Ziggler in this match?
To be fair, though, Dolph Ziggler has more right to be in this match than Baron Corbin.
Why the fuck is Baron Corbin in this match? I don't understand. I mean, AJ Styles, former world champion. I get that. Dolph Ziggler, I guess, yeah, former world champion. But, like, the fact that Dolph Ziggler won it years ago, just, he's still Dolph Ziggler, right?
You're never going to like him.
No. I'm really not. I mean, unless something drastically changes. But even when he's tried to drastically change or tried to have the most interesting story that Dolph Ziggler can possibly have, like when he fought The Miz for the Intercontinental title and put his career on the line, that was mildly interesting. But then he won it, and I was back to being so bored by him because he's still just Dolph Ziggler. I think the only thing Dolph Ziggler can do is go away for a while, and maybe that would make me interested in Dolph Ziggler when he comes back. But I think if he sticks around, there's very little that Dolph Ziggler could do at this point to make me interested in Dolph Ziggler.
I think Dolph's a good guy to have in the match. Money in the Bank is something that he's been in a lot, and I think he's a good kind of like fall guy to have in there. You know, as someone who just kind of, he's like a safe bet of like, you know, he'll do some cool spots. It's fine. It's not, you know, it's a choice, I guess. But they all kind of go through, you know, like, so Shane basically concedes the fact that Kevin Owens has basically made a good point and adds him to the match. So it's going to be the six of those guys. Baron Corbin talks about, you know, nobody else has a chance. AJ Styles says it's the house that he built, and you know he's gonna beat WWE's version of Eric Cartman, Kevin Owens. And then he basically goes around to all of them. Sami Zayn comes out saying he didn't come to SmackDown to watch AJ Styles take victory laps. I'll be honest, I thought Sami's delivery here was slightly heelish. I wasn't crazy on it, to be honest.
It was a little, maybe. It was a little dickhead, Sami Zayn, which was weird.
Which is, you know, I think that given that you were saying in the arena there was some booze for him, we could do with seeing some fun, zany Sami Zayn again.
Yeah, because, I mean, Sami Zayn is one of the best at being a babyface who connects to the crowd when he's allowed to, but it bums me out, and I've had a few people get back to me on Twitter and say, well, his new persona is not relatable to everyone, which I guess I can see. I mean, he's being super neurotic and crazy, and that appeals to me because I'm super neurotic and crazy, so I really love this Sami Zayn, but I guess it doesn't work for everyone. And also, if you've only seen him on the main roster, like, he just loses a bunch, and they haven't really done that well to present him as a star in losing a bunch the way they did in NXT. So I guess I can see people's point, but it just bums me out because I know how good he can be and how he can connect to a crowd so organically, and it just, I don't know, it's just kind of a shame.
So basically then Baron Corbin says that Sami's victory was a fluke. Ziggler talks about he's the only guy in the match to have ever won the briefcase, which is, I guess, you know, is the decent point for him being in it. And then Nakamura said, you know,
it's the most Dolph Ziggler point ever, though, right?
Well, I mean, that's the only argument for him being in there is that point. So fair enough.
Which is this, like, it's the same talking point that Dolph Ziggler has forever and ever and ever, is look what I've done in the WWE. Look at all this stuff I've accomplished. And none of it has happened in the last, what, like 3-4 years? He's just been an exercise in sadness since he was on top of the world.
An exercise in sadness. Poor Dolph. But yeah, he has been, 100%. Nakamura says that he is Shinsuke Nakamura, but they can now call him Mr. Money in the Bank. And then Shane ends up making a rematch with Sami and Baron Corbin, and a tag match with Nakamura and AJ against Owens and Ziggler. I thought the opening segment was decent, and I think the Money in the Bank match is going to be fucking great. So I think that's good, and I don't think there's a clear winner, which is also fun. So it worked for me.
Yeah, that's the most exciting part about this for me, is that I don't know who's going to win. I don't know if they know who's going to win. I mean, we talked about it before, right? That plans change for the Money in the Bank ladder match.
The only person I know who's not going to win is Dolph Ziggler.
Right. That is not going to happen. And if that does happen, then play this clip back to us, and also we will be just wallowing in sadness at that point, so we won't be bothered to listen, because seriously, that is not going to happen, you guys. But no, I mean, that's part of the excitement, is that I don't know who's going to win. So it's exciting going into the match. And then also, the only thing that bums me out about it, and it's something I put on Twitter, I was like, oh, the Money in the Bank match is going to be really good, because looking at the participants, it is going to be really good. And I'm excited about it. But multiple people pointed out that we didn't get contenders matches for this. We didn't get people trying to vie for a spot in Money in the Bank. And what's the date of the Money in the Bank pay-per-view?
June 18th.
June 18th. So we have a little under a month to go. And it seems like that could have been a really clever way to build TV and to make TV matches have stakes, right? Is to say, okay, we're going to have some Money in the Bank contenders matches and build TV around earning your spot in Money in the Bank. And I would have really liked to see that, because I don't know, it seems like Raw's doing the same thing right now with the build to Extreme Rules and the Fatal, what, 5-way that they're doing. They just announced all the participants, and now they're just fighting each other every week on Raw, and there are no stakes, and it doesn't really matter. And the wrestling is good, but it's hard to get invested in it, and I'm just a little worried that that's what we're going to get on SmackDown now, is all of the participants of the Money in the Bank ladder match fighting each other for reasons, because they're going to fight each other again or something. And so I would have really liked to see contenders matches, or having to earn your spot, or some reason that these are the guys that are in the match. Like last week on Talking Smack, Ty Dillinger tried to throw his name in the hat for Money in the Bank and was like, that's what I want. You know, I'm here to be a champion. And even though I've already exceeded people's expectations, I want to go for the main title here. And he, it seems, was never given an opportunity in the land of opportunity to even be considered for the Money in the Bank ladder match. And I kind of would like to know why.
Yeah, I mean, I get that argument. I think that the plus point for me of it is that I think these are the right guys to be in the match. I mean, apart from Dolph. Dolph's the interchangeable guy. But, you know, I think that the plus point is that now you have these guys in and you have a few weeks to sort of focus on why all of them could win. And that's good. But I know what you mean. You know, there could have been qualifying matches for it, and that could have been something. I'm not crazy sure that I wanted Ty Dillinger to lose a match to one of these guys straight away, but maybe that would have been better than him not being on the show. So, yeah, I can see the argument. It didn't bother me too much, but I get why it's problematic.
It's not something I'm raging about, but it's something that I would have liked to see, and I think it would have made the TV a little more interesting for me.
No, I get that. I think it's a fair point. We get Carmella and Natalia already in the ring with James Ellsworth and Tamina at ringside. Charlotte comes out with Becky. Naomi's at ringside for support. The match goes about 10 minutes or so. Ellsworth tries to interfere, but Naomi prevents it, and then Becky Lynch puts Carmella in disarmor for the win. Becky and Charlotte are victorious, and yeah, I guess that's that. What did you think of the match?
Speaking of why is any of this happening, like, it was fine. It was a fine match. I enjoyed seeing Ellsworth get kicked in the head by Naomi. It would have been more effective if Naomi would have actually hit him, which she didn't really. But I like seeing Ellsworth get kicked in the head. I like the Ellsworth-Carmella dynamic. That's the main thing that I have to say about the match, which is not great considering, I mean, Charlotte's in the match. She's supposed to be a big focus point of the women's division, and all of this is just leaving me very cold and very annoyed right now, because all of the women are just fighting each other over nothing, it seems, because it's not even about the title at all. Like, Naomi is the champion, and we know that Charlotte still wants to be the champion, and, I mean, we get the segment later in the show where they set up the Fatal 5-Way elimination for next week, but I'm really ready for some individual stories in the women's division, because this is just, everyone's just kind of fighting because they're in teams or whatever. And
so let's talk about it now. So basically, Shane's backstage, and the women all show up and they want to get a shot at the women's title. And basically, Shane makes a 5-way match for next week with the winner getting the shot at the Money in the Bank. It feels like they're kind of, you know, they need to wrap up this whole welcoming committee storyline, and like, I get it, but I think that my big thing is that you have Becky and Charlotte, who are great in the ring. You have Naomi, who's getting better. You have Carmella, who's not really ready to have big singles matches. I feel like the roster's a little bit, it's like a seesaw in a way sometimes, which is difficult, but then you kind of have to just bite the bullet and just go for stories
Which is what they were doing before on SmackDown, and it was working well. Like, Carmella versus Nikki Bella was really interesting, even though Carmella's not the greatest wrestler, but they made it work.
The story was good, but then I think the problem with the match was it would get to second gear, but never get to third gear.
Right. At least the story was good, and right now we don't have any of that.
Yeah. I think the problem I have is that, you know, I'm a really big Charlotte fan, and I don't really want to see her as a babyface. It's not that I don't want to see her as a babyface, but I don't think there's anybody on the heel side that's good enough to make me want to see her as a babyface.
I feel like her heel persona is still definitely there, right? Like, Charlotte is still...
Well, I feel like the problem is if you've got all three of the women who are on the babyface side who are the strongest three characters slash wrestlers, that's a problem.
I feel like Carmella is a very good character, but she doesn't have the wrestling to back it up. Natalia, bless her heart, she's trying to turn into a cat and be evil, but she always feels like she's just playing pretend, right? Like, she never feels like an actual... Like, it's interesting because I've heard people like Brian Alvarez say that Natalia is too likable on Total Divas to ever be a heel on SmackDown. And I forget who asked us about this on Twitter, so I'm sorry that I can't credit you specifically. But someone asked us, you know, do you agree or disagree? And I've never found Natalia likable on Total Divas. I've always found her like a crazy person on Total Divas. I love the antics. I still want Total Night Hearts to be a thing. But I've always thought that she comes across as super overbearing and controlling and insane, right? So Natalia as a heel works a lot better for me than Natalia as a babyface does, because she always just comes across as mental. But it's still, I mean, she's the worst actress in the history of human beings. So
I love her to death, but yeah, I do get what you're saying.
But it's hard to believe her when she's trying to be super mean, because she doesn't look that mean either.
As long as she's the coach for Survivor Series again, I'm happy.
Like wacky Natalia, I'm perfectly okay with, because wacky Natalia works, because she just seems, you know, sort of unhinged, and that works for her.
The problem that Natalia's got is that when Natalia's a babyface, she's not the strongest babyface. But when she's a heel, I don't think she's really believable as being a heel.
She's just not believable as being anything, unfortunately, except wacky coach of Survivor Series Team Natalia. And I think that's more what she has to kind of focus on. But right now she's supposed to be super dastardly and trying to be the leader of the welcoming committee, which is still, I don't even really buy their reason for being together, because they say that it's because of Charlotte, but now, like, why? Like, Charlotte hasn't even won, so... Shouldn't it have been kind of a short-term thing? I mean, they did win at Backlash, so why are they still all together? I mean, it seems like, I guess maybe they're not, because now they all kind of want to go for the title, and there's the power struggle between Carmella and Natalia, which is maybe the most fascinating part about it. But I'm just really, really ready for this to splinter into individual stories, which makes me glad that it's going to be an elimination match at Money in the Bank.
Easy for you to say.
I cannot speak right now, but I'm glad that it's going to be, yeah, it's great for a podcast, seriously, but I'm glad that it's going to be an elimination match, because then maybe we can splinter off into individual stories and get something started and get back to actual storytelling in the women's division, as opposed to everyone just lumped all together.
Yeah. The problem as well is, you know, the idea is to do a women's Money in the Bank match, obviously Pro Wrestling mm-hmm. should be reporting that. I don't know if I'm just not counting enough women, if one of the women faced Naomi, then there's three of them left. Four of them left. And then maybe Lana comes in, do you really want to put Lana in a Money in the Bank match straight away? You could bring back Summer Rae, I guess.
Summer Rae, who's technically contracted to Raw? I know at this point it doesn't matter.
You could fix that one pretty easily. But, I mean, the Lana one's the one I'm more worried about, is I just don't think she's ready for that kind of match. See if you can do a women's Money in the Bank. It's like, I think the women's Hell in a Cell struggled a little bit, and that had two great female performers in it. So I feel like if you're going to do a women's Money in the Bank, like, quite rightly so, and I say this as the least sexist phrase of all time, they need to fucking bring it. If you do a women's Money in the Bank match, you need to be just as fucking good as the men's ones. That's the bar that you're trying to set. And also the fact that we're going to have a men's Money in the Bank match on the same show, it needs to be really good. And I'm worried about the quality of that match. very worried about it, because Natalia, like, I don't know, say it's Charlotte, for example, say it's Naomi and Charlotte, okay, so you've got Becky and Natalia, they're really good. Carmella, Tamina,
yeah.
Atlanta, like, that's a fucking tough shift to try and get a good Money in the Bank match at that. So
it makes me worry. I'm of two minds about it, because I would love to see a women's Money in the Bank ladder match. I also don't know if they have the performers for it right now.
I think that you should have, I mean, I don't know if they'll do it. I think the way to do it is to have the Money in the Bank match, maybe have some women from Raw come in for it. Like, do something where you can be like, you know, Sasha can come in for it, and if she wins, she gets to go to SmackDown or something.
Like, you'd almost need to fill it out. Like, and that's part of the problem with not having nearly enough women on the roster. I mean, that just comes down to, you need more women on the roster. You need to actually have proper women's divisions.
And they're going to do the, I mean, the thing is, once they've had the women's tournament this summer, that problem will probably be fixed. But until then,
yeah.
Which, by the way, the Mae Young Classic, great name.
It's a name.
I can't tell you how many tweets I've had about, like, will the trophy be a big hand? Like, and I really hope it is, just for the fun.
I just find it interesting that Mae Young's contributions to wrestling are like, I'm really fucking glad they didn't call it the Fabulous Moolah Classic, because, oh boy, would I have opinions about that.
Well, that's why they didn't call it that.
Because, good.
Because, because they can't call it a tournament after a woman who very publicly sold women wrestlers to people and took money for it. Whereas, like, the thing is, people have asked me, like, oh, why is it called the Mae Young Classic? Like, well, first of all, they can't call it the Fabulous Moolah Classic. Secondly, they don't want to call it the Stephanie McMahon Classic, because, you know, you can imagine. But thirdly,
I'm glad it's not the Stephanie McMahon Classic as well.
The Mae Young story's good. It's a good narrative. She wrestled through World War II. She wrestled in seven different decades. Like,
are they going to mention how she used to seduce people and rob them?
Sandra, we can't tell all the stories.
I mean,
we have to tell some. The thing is, though, if you're gonna, you know, if you go down that route, everybody's got skeletons in the closet. I don't have a problem with it personally. Some people might. It doesn't really bother me. It would bother me if it was the Stephanie Classic, but
it would bother me if it were the Moolah or the Stephanie Classic. That would bother
me a lot.
It's the
Mae Young Classic. She was old. She wrestled.
And I love Mae Young. Okay, like, I love Mae Young, but I don't know. Her history in wrestling, like, she wasn't necessarily, like, the greatest female performer of all time, but I kind of get it. Like, it's WWE history, and they're gonna paint the story that they want to. And, I mean, Mae Young was generally well-liked, right? Like, I always think back to Lipstick and Dynamite with, and if you haven't seen that documentary, by the way, like, look up Lipstick and Dynamite.
Oh my God, Mildred Burke, Jesus Christ.
Kill 'em, gill 'em.
Oh God, she is Gladys Killam-Gillam.
She is my favorite part of that documentary. And when they get to that, like, I know. When they get to the reunion, though, and Moolah's trying to say hi to her, she's like, no, no, I don't want to talk to you. Where's Johnny May? Because she hates Moolah so much.
I like Mae Young. I'm cool with it being called the Mae Young Classic. Doesn't bother me. I'm looking forward to it. JR commentating. I know that Triple H is trying to get some female referees, which is really cool.
They've hired a female referee, haven't they?
I think they have, yeah. So
yeah, which is really cool.
It's all good.
She's worked some live NXT events and stuff, and apparently did really well. So they hired her, which I think is awesome.
Happy days. Sami Zayn and Baron Corbin had a rematch. Sami Zayn rolls him up in like 10 seconds, gets the win. Baron Corbin.
Easy for you to say.
Oh, fucking sassy Sandra over there.
you did it to me first.
Tit for tat. Baron Corbin did his best Leif Cassidy impression, but took it one step further because he tossed Sami Zayn outside, hit him over the back of a chair, threw him out of a barricade, dragged him around, hit him repeatedly, and Sami Zayn was stretchered out. So I guess we'll see what happens there.
I like Baron Corbin being pissed off that he lost. Also, Sami Zayn winning twice in a row does not ever seem to happen. So, as a Sami Zayn fan, that was kind of cool. Like,
also, Baron Corbin does have a history of trying to murder people, so I'd be careful.
Yeah, Sami Zayn. That's true. Sami Zayn, watch out for forklifts.
Backstage, Styles and Nakamura talk about the tag match. Nakamura tells Styles that at Money in the Bank, he's going to climb the ladder and turn AJ's house into his playground. I hate these metaphors. But, you know, it's AJ and Nakamura, so I'll live with it.
It's just so forced and scripted, right? Like, who talks like that as a human being?
Nobody. Shame. Now, one of my
favorites. Kenny, when you come into my yard, it's going to stop being a yard and it's going to be a playground, but also it's my house and it's actually a wrestling. Like, no one does that.
Dun, 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 my house. Shane McMahon's backstage, and this is really tough to get through. The fashion police come in to hand in their badges. They're resigning, and they hand in their badges, they hand in the wig, they hand in their guns, and all that stuff.
They're loaded. Watch out.
They're loaded. And they're pretty despondent. They know their time is done. And then Shane said, "Wait a minute, you know, you guys have already proved that you belonged, and I've made singles matches for you guys tonight against the Usos." And then they're like, "Get your stuff. We're back on the case against the Uggos." And they walk away. And it was great.
It was fantastic. I loved it. I was heartbroken for them when they were starting to pack up their stuff, and they had the whole box of disguises, and you know, handing in all of their badges and their guns and. I love the fashion police so much. And when the subtitle came up, "The Final File?" question mark. I was like, no, don't be the final file. Don't ever be the final file. I want to see more fashion files forever, please. Because they're the best part of SmackDown right now.
Yep.
And so when they said they were back on the case, I was like, yes, elation. I'm so excited. And I couldn't wait to see these singles matches, even though I figured that the singles matches wouldn't necessarily go super well for them. But boy, was I not prepared for the emotional journey of this episode of SmackDown Live as regards the tag team division.
We will get there. Jinder Mahal's celebration, his Punjabi celebration, is up next. We have drummers, we have Indian dancers, the Singh brothers come out, Jinder comes out, he makes his entrance, there's a dance number going on around him. JBL kept talking about how there's over 1 billion people celebrating in India right now, because apparently India just listen to any hyperbole, and all 1 billion of them gather on a TV set to watch SmackDown.
1.3 billion, they kept saying.
All of them. Jinder says, you know, they can shower him with hatred, but it won't change the fact that 1.3 billion people are celebrating that he's the WWE champion. They hate him because of the way he looks and he talks different. Randy Orton was on his way down. He was on the ascent as the greatest WWE champion of all time. I'm really trying to get through this. He then spoke to his people in his language, said a few words in Punjabi, and then celebrated with a pyro display that was like Roman Reigns had just beat Undertaker at WrestleMania. Sandra, what do you think of Jinder's celebration?
I'm so of two minds about it, because I love the celebration itself, right? I love the colors. I love all the dancing and this, like, the absolute celebration. Culturally accurate celebration for Jinder Mahal, you know, champion of India, that kind of stuff. I love that. I'm like, how am I supposed to boo you with this kind of celebration? This is amazing. Like, I felt like when Jinder Mahal came out down the ramp, I felt like he actually looked like a star. I thought it was really cool. And then he opened his mouth and was just like, you hate me because I'm Indian and you hate me because of my culture. And I think what upsets me the most about it is that the crowd is playing into this, right? Like, the crowd is actually booing him and actually booing this beautiful celebration of Indian culture. And they're actually doing USA chants at him just for existing and speaking a different language. And so while I really like the Jinder Mahal story of him being an undeserving champion, and I guess he's actually a very complex character, thinking that people hate him because of his Indian culture, but that makes him on kind of a meta level more hateable. Cause it's like, no, that's not why I hate you. I hate you because you don't deserve to be champion. But the fact that you're saying this is why I hate you, like, that kind of makes me want to boo you, right? That's all really fascinating to me. I really don't like that the crowd is playing into it and making it just kind of a flat xenophobic storyline. Because I think it could be so much more than that. I think the undeserving champion angle is a lot more compelling than, hey, I'm brown, you don't like me.
Yeah. I think the positive is that this was a very well put together celebration.
Yeah, I loved the celebration itself. I thought it was great.
The problem is that I watched this celebration 10 years ago with the Great Khali. And the thing with the Great Khali was, if you watch the Great Khali, he wasn't a heel. he was just a giant, and, you know, he happened to work in America, or so he happened to work in India, he happened to be a heel in America, and that was kind of what it was. And I think my issue with a lot of this is that, I just don't think gender's there yet. I think that he did better here than he has so far, so fair play to him for, you know, trying. I guess the problem is that what they're doing here is playing into a lot of real life horrible political things that are happening, and I just don't know if we need this right now to be happening. So it kind of rubs me the wrong way a little bit. I don't really understand why he's like, the fact that he's a heel, like, I think he should be a heel because he's terrible rather than being a heel because he's Indian. Because, I mean, he's not Indian, but, you know, he is for the purposes of this.
He's of Indian descent.
And I think it's like, I just feel like, you know, if you want to make a star in India or Mexico or China or whatever country it is that you've got a hard-on for this week, the way to do it is to organically grow someone as a character and then push them as a babyface. That's the
but
way
I think
to get
that's what they're
over.
Doing
but
in a
not.
Sense.
They're not, though, because what they're doing is they are making it out that in America he is a villain and he hates America and everyone chants USA. That's what they're making it. So they're making it that, and he's not very good, and he's not had a story, and he's not really got anything to go by. But whereas if they had, like, built him up for 6 months and he had had a story and, like, build up all the funny shit that people say, you know, don't hinder gender or, like, you know, he used to be in three-man band, like, make him fun and build him up. Like, why does he need to be a heel in America because he's of Indian descent, which is not why people disliked him, FYI. But, like, I think that what they're doing is they're doing the same lazy attempt that they did 10 years ago. And, like, the Khali thing worked to an extent, but Khali was down the card within a year. Because of how they positioned it. They positioned it as, let's make him a heel in America because Americans hate brown people, apparently, and then make him a babyface in his home country. And I don't think that way and style of booking a character is going to be successful long term, and I don't know how many times they need to do this and it fails to realize that.
I just find it really interesting that we're watching this at the same time as we're watching the Hart Foundation on Retro Raw. Because we're seeing the exact same sort of thing, right? Because that's what they're trying to do, is manufacture that type of environment again. They're trying to make it, because on Retro Raw, we're talking about, you know, Bret Hart and the Hart Foundation being babyfaces in Canada and across the world and heels in America because they're like, boo, America. And Jinder's doing the exact same thing. And I feel like 20 years ago, it might have worked better. And I'm not even sure this is true anymore, because I had a theory that the Jinder Mahal thing wouldn't work as well nowadays because the world feels so much smaller. And maybe that's just because of my perspective. Like, I talk to people across the world all the time, right? Like, I talk to you all the time. You're not American. I work for a family who, you know, they've become American citizens, but they're from India. So this is especially interesting to me because I have people who come into my work and ask me about the Muslim family that owns my, you know, the place where I work. And I'm like, well, they're not Muslim, they're Sikh. And that's not the same thing at all. So the stuff that Jinder's talking about in the ring is actually very real, like misconceptions of his people and misconceptions of his race and his religion and that kind of thing. Like, that kind of thing is very real. I think part of the problem is that Jinder's not the greatest performer at doing this, but I find the story really interesting. I don't know how it rings nowadays. And I think that maybe I'm just not the best person to judge it because I'm not someone who is going to see, you know, someone having a beautiful Indian celebration and go, boo, you're awful. You should totally be doing an American celebration because that's the best way to go. Because it's just not, like, I don't consider American culture all that superior to other cultures in the world. I just don't think like that. And I don't think a lot of Americans think like that anymore. Maybe they do. Maybe it's tapping into an incredibly racist and stereotypical culture that I don't want to admit is as big as it is here in this country.
I think the difference, though, is that, you know, in 1997, the Bret Hart thing was like, I mean, Canada and America got on just fine, really, in comparison mm-hmm. to But, you know, there are a lot of people, and it's just the truth, a lot of people don't differentiate between different parts of the world. So, you know, they see Indian people as the same people that bombed America, the same people that, you know, they don't differentiate different parts of the world. So I feel like it's a much more divisive thing than we've seen before. And I think to have him branded as the heel in America is just a really old trope that they do. Now, to be fair, the SmackDown rating this week was up 7% from last week. So there was interest in seeing what they were going to do here with gender. And I guess the test will be if people stay for that. But I think that the best way that I can describe this segment, really, and the experiment is like, and this is the worst one for Sandra because she hates all things good, but Christmas is something that I enjoy, and a lot of people around the world
don't hate all things good, I just hate Christmas.
But like, if you wake up on Christmas morning, right, and it's like, right, there's a tree, and there's like Christmas songs going, and there's like a fire, and there's this big present in front of you, and you're like, right, the scene has been set for enjoyment. The scene has been set here for me to have a great time. And there's like a bow in the present, so you like undo the bow, and then there's like it's a massive box, so you like take off the wrapping paper, and then there's a box, and then in the box there's another box, and then when you finally get into the present, it's just something generic. I feel like that's what the gender thing is. It's all layered in this like really cool stuff, or like really interesting, like, oh, big Punjabi celebration and dancers and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, when you take it all away, what do you have? You have gender, who I feel bad for him, because I think he's been put in a position that he's not ready for, and I think ultimately that's going to be the downfall of it. But the ratings have gone up for this week, so maybe people are into it, and maybe I guess the test will be next week. Are people still into it? Is the decision to have him and Randy Orton face off again at Money in the Bank the right call? I don't know. I think he's probably going to hold the belt throughout the summer, because they've got a tour of India coming up in September. I can't see them taking the belt off him before then. But I guess for me, it's just like, I would prefer to have a babyface who organically goes up the ranks of the company, who is of Indian heritage. That would be a storyline I would enjoy. Whereas throwing a jobber into a main event spot and getting me to try and dislike him because he's Indian is just not something that really works for me.
Yeah, and it's weird, because the whole undeserving champion thing is the thing I like most about the Jinder Mahal story. But then also, if you want to focus on the Indian aspect, and if you want to focus on him being an Indian hero, just make him a babyface everywhere. So I think the celebration I really enjoyed. I thought he did well in the spot. I thought he did pretty well at the promo and everything. Like, he did fine. It wasn't great or anything. But I think I'm just so divided, because I like being able to boo a champion who absolutely doesn't deserve to be there, has two lackeys, and that's the only reason he's champion. That part of the story, it's like, yeah, it's great to be able to boo him, and I want to see who can take it from him. Because the idea of a super weak champion that anyone could go after and potentially beat is fascinating to me. Like, the first time the Singh brothers get banned from ringside, he could lose the championship easily, right? And I think that's a fascinating story, and it lends an air of unpredictability to SmackDown and to the title scene. I love that. But having it be all about his heritage and all about his culture, and expecting me to boo that part of it, I just am left confused, I guess.
I guess we'll see. We'll see what happens next week. They've got 3 weeks now, 4 weeks now, 3 weeks to build to Money in the Bank.
Money in the Bank.
Three and a half weeks, something like that. So we'll see how Jinder's build goes. I'm trying to not shit on it as much, but you know, we'll see. Lana has a video package. She's coming soon to SmackDown Live, same as usual.
This song gets stuck in my head all the time. I don't even think the vignettes are very good. And it's kind of infuriating that this song gets stuck in my head as often as it does, because I just want to see her debut and do something, and maybe do something different with the women's division on SmackDown. They need more women, even if she's just going to come in and lose or something. I just want to see her.
I think if you're laying your hopes on Lana, she's fucking atrocious and total diva, so I don't know what she's going to do here. But we'll see. I'm curious to see whether she keeps the accent or not. given that we've heard her off the accent on Total Divas. But
yeah, that's true.
Tyler Breeze takes on Jey Uso, and Tyler Breeze rolls him up for the win in like 24 seconds or 20, something like that. Then we go right into Fandango versus Jimmy Uso, and he gets rolled up in like 30 seconds. And then the Fashion Police challenge the Usos to a rematch for the tag team titles. The match has been approved. They have a match that goes about 5 minutes or so. Fandango goes up top to do the... What's his move called again?
I don't remember what it's called. It's an atomic leg drop, but...
He goes up for the big leg drop, and Jimmy Uso tries to stop him. Jey makes the blind tag before Fandango hits the move on Jimmy, and then Jey comes off the opposite turnbuckle with a splash and covers Fandango to retain the championships. Good finish. Strong finish. Good story. I thought the story of them both beating them in singles matches very quickly, leading to a tag title match, and the agony of the defeat with the blind tag was a really good story and the best part of the show.
Oh, absolutely the best part of the show. I mean, what an emotional roller coaster, right? Like, Tyler Breeze rolls up the Uso, and I don't remember which one it is, and you just told me which one was which, but I don't remember
Jimmy
anymore.
Jimmy is the one who got the move done to him, but Jey made the blind tag, so Jey was the one that came in.
No, I was just talking about which one Tyler faced and which one Fandango faced in singles action. I don't remember which was which. It doesn't even really matter that much, but, you know, Tyler rolling up the Uso so quickly, and then the other Uso losing to basically the same ruse, because Tyler was putting on disguises on the outside, and they're mind games were getting into the heads of the Usos, right? And they got an impromptu tag match, not even for next week, for right now. And I thought for a minute, Kenny, I thought their day one might be H. And it turns out that it just wasn't to be.
Listen to you. And day one might be H, for fuck's sake. But yes, that's very true.
This is why you love me. But,
Bob is rolling in his grave.
Bob loved this sort of thing, okay? But Bob actually would have loved Breezango versus the Usos today. He would have, because it's
Bob
crazy.
Gender. He would have been good to talk
about.
I
think Bob would have been on my side.
Of course you do. You always think he'd have been on your side.
Well, I think he would have been, just because... I'm not sure, though. I'm not super sure. But I think that he would be willing to go with it a little bit more.
I might go to a psychic and ask if they can like channel Bob in the other dimension and find out what he thinks.
I would be fascinated to know what Bob would think about Jinder Mahal. But no, I mean, the whole story here was really interesting, and some of the best storytelling they've done on SmackDown Live recently, right? Like, I didn't even expect Tyler Breeze and Fandango to get wins over the Usos in singles action necessarily, much less both win, much less get a tag team match right there, where I really thought that they might do it. It didn't make a ton of sense for Breezango to get the tag titles, but I was like, maybe they're going to do this, you know, because, I mean, they have momentum on their side, and I was all, like, buzzing from the victories, and it's what the crowd wanted, it's what I wanted. Everyone's united behind Breezango because they're amazing, right? And it wasn't to be, and it was agonizing, and I felt actual heartbreak for them. And looking at Tyler Breeze's face after the match, where he just looked so upset, and, I mean, we're just coming off of the heartbreaking agony we saw when they were handing in their badges and their guns and everything to Shane McMahon. Like, now, are they going to do that again? Are they going to say, no, we're for real done as the Fashion Police? I want them to still be the Fashion Police. I want them to still be on the case, damn it. I want them to investigate the gang warfare perpetrated by the, you know, the Mean Street Posse. I want them to investigate why John Cena is missing. I want them to investigate all of these very pressing fashion issues. And I really hope that they continue in another story, even if they're not going for the titles anymore, because I think anyone with a brain knows that the New Day and the Usos are probably going to be the next feud, right? But I don't want Breezango to just fade into oblivion because
of it.
That
was going to be my next question, because obviously in Talking Smack this week, the New Day make their return to WWE and to SmackDown Live, and they...
Wasn't it announced that they were going to return on SmackDown at some point?
It was like soon.
Or was it not?
It was like soon. They never gave like a week it was going to happen. Okay. But they turn up on Talking Smack, and they talk about Breezango, and they talk about the Usos, and then they actually bring up American Alpha and say, you know, don't be understating American Alpha. So, yeah.
Oh, they're great, even though we haven't seen them on TV in weeks, which is not my favorite thing. But
So I guess we're going to see... The New Day get involved. You know, for me, it's like, I'm kind of done with tag teams winning or people or tag teams winning things straight away. And I think if Breezango were to win the tag team titles, I'm good with seeing a story to build up to that, and like seeing a real, like, it's not very often in wrestling you get to see like a finally they've done it kind of thing, and I think Breezango could get that. So, yeah, and I'm actually excited about seeing Breezango and the New Day interacting. I think it'll be fun.
Yeah, it could be quite good. I think my faith in the Takedown, the Takedown. Oh my gosh, what am I even saying? The SmackDown. That, yeah, sure. No, the SmackDown tag team division, my faith in them has been shaken since they've not really been able to tell a compelling story since the genesis of SmackDown Live. And it worries me that American Alpha has just faded away and not been on TV. So I'm really hoping...
Have they classified themselves as
obsolete? It seems like they might as well have at this point. I almost wish they had gone to Raw and been featured rather than just not being on television. But whatever, but I'm hoping that, I mean, Breezango have been the best part of SmackDown Live for me recently. The Fashion Files have been the most entertaining part of SmackDown. And I'm hoping that that earns them a spot in terms of being featured going forward, even if they're not going for the title, so that we can have the build that you're talking about, right? I would love a moment where they finally win the tag team titles from either the Usos or someone else. I don't know. But if we can have that long build, I think that would be excellent. I just don't trust them to tell multiple tag team stories because they don't seem capable of it at the moment.
See, the New Day are back. The Breezango are still trying to get the run against the Uggos, and it'll continue. So we'll see. Main event time, AJ Styles and Nakamura against Dolph Ziggler and Kevin Owens. It was a long match. It was a long, long match. It was good, but I struggled with it a little bit because of the lack of stakes.
I'm glad I'm not the only one, because this is a match that I was like, oh, AJ Styles and Nakamura teaming, that should be really fascinating. Just like every time I see Nakamura, I'm like, oh, that should be really fascinating, and then it's not. This was another example of that for me. It was just, it was a match, and it was good.
I think part of it is that I feel like Nakamura is the kind of guy that, like, he will deliver in a big match situation. And, like, he's not had that yet, really. I mean, his one really big match situation was against Sami Zayn in Dallas. And it was great. And I feel like, and I'm not saying this is right, but... No, do you know what? I will say it's right. Nakamura's, like, what, 36 years old? And he's wrestled a very tough style in Japan. And he doesn't have... I think that it's clear that he's come to WWE because his bump card is on the way down. And I don't want him to waste his best stuff that he's got to give us in developmental. So if he didn't want to give everything down there because he wants to hold back up here, that's fine. But he needs to...
That's fine, but shouldn't he have maybe brought it for his debut? On pay-per-view, no less?
I mean, it was an opening match with Dolph Ziggler.
I'm aware of that, and so, I'm not saying that was the best decision.
No, I'm not.
But
I'm
just
saying,
if you want to make an impact, like, he hasn't.
But I think he probably knows he can get away with what he did at Backlash,
which, like, makes him very much like Randy Orton in a lot of ways right now, and that's giving me pause.
Or he is a guy who knows what his limitations are, and he wants to hold it off for big matches. Which, listen, if you're going to say to me, I can get a barn burner match with AJ Styles and Nakamura at WrestleMania and Nakamura and John Cena at SummerSlam, I'd rather he held it for those matches than an opening match with Dolph Ziggler on a pay-per-view and a tag match on a random episode of SmackDown. I could be wrong, and maybe he never gives it and we come back to this conversation and I go, well, Sandra, you were right. But I'm hoping that he's got something in the tank that he's going to give us in a big match situation. Like,
I definitely understand your point. I almost just think it would be better to hold off on him wrestling then, though, instead of introducing us to lackluster matches on the way to that, because I'm just afraid that if he has too many lackluster TV matches that don't matter, that by the time he gets the chance to bring it in a big match against someone like AJ Styles or John Cena, that the crowd will have waned on him.
True. I mean, I think the thing that's going for him is that when he came out, of all the people that came out for the Money in the Bank promo at the beginning, he was clearly the superstar of the segment.
That's like, true. I think the crowd seems to react to him better than I do, which is, I mean, it's fair play.
But then you've seen, you're different to the crowd in the sense of, like, the random crowd that goes to SmackDown are not the crowd that have watched him every single week in NXT for a year.
That's very true.
So for you, you've seen, it's like if your friend's in a band, and, like, say your friend's in, like, Kasabian or something. Like, if you've seen Kasabian perform tons and tons of times, you're not still like, oh my god, all the time. Whereas people who have seen him for the first couple of times are like, oh my god. So I think that's probably why Nakamura's still getting that reaction from a lot of people. I'm more on your end of things than theirs, to be honest. But I think Money in the Bank, I think he'll deliver there. That's my gut.
I hope so, because I keep wanting to like him. I keep wanting an excuse to like him, and I just keep being disappointed.
He ends up in the end of this match, you know, Styles, AJ tries to set the Styles Clash on Kevin Owens, and then Ziggler hits him with the super kick, but then Nakamura ends up hitting the Kinshasa on Kevin Owens for the pinfall, so, you know, he's pinned the United States champion. So that takes his kind of, you know, continuing, and it's, you know, you mentioned a really good point earlier on about how, you know, Raw and SmackDown are kind of paralleling in the fact that, like, you know, on Raw we've got all these guys fighting who are going to be in this Fatal 5-Way, and on SmackDown we're going to have all these guys fighting who are in the Money in the Bank. It's kind of the same story, and it's difficult. I mean, I think in a way Raw has a slightly more interesting story given that there's the Brock Lesnar thing that's kind of making...
There's always that looming threat to come and change everything.
And, like, you have the Finn Balor aspect where, like, Paul Heyman's talking to him, and then Seth Rollins wants a title shot, and then you've got Bray Wyatt saying stuff. So I feel like there's more going on there that's kind of keeping things going, and then their pay-per-view is in, like, a week. So, you know, there's not really long to wait, but we've got, like, 3.5 weeks till Money in the Bank.
Which still doesn't seem that long, considering we just had a pay-per-view on Sunday. But I guess what I kind of wish for this is that everyone was treating it like, oh, if I win Money in the Bank, I'm golden. Jinder fucking Mahal is the champion. Like, I wish that they would actually play that up a little bit more and say, well, I've beaten Jinder Mahal. Have you beaten Jinder Mahal? Yeah, everybody's beaten Jinder Mahal. We can beat Jinder Mahal. And I wish that that were more of the story. And it's just not, because I think of what they're trying to present as Jinder Mahal being India's hero or something.
And I mean, I guess the thing is, like, it's an interesting story. I feel like this is the first time for me since the brand split where I'm kind of down a little bit on both brands, which is difficult. And I think what's difficult for me is, like, see, if you write down on paper who's on SmackDown, I'd be like, this is going to be great. But then,
well, I think that's what we said after the Superstar Shakeup, right? We were like, yeah, the rosters finally feel even. It feels like SmackDown got some more star power. This is going to be great. And then it just hasn't really delivered all that well.
And I think when you look at Jinder being the top guy in that, it's difficult. You know, like, again, you know, I just like to see a story build. That's where, and I know some people, like, and I know you're maybe more on this board, some people are like, I like the fact that he came from nowhere and won the title, and I get that that might be how some people feel. That's just not a story I like. It's fine for somebody like, say, Samoa Joe suddenly won the championship, or Bray Wyatt suddenly won the championship like he did in February. That's fine because I've built an association to that character that I enjoy them. But there was nothing to go on with Jinder, ever. That's where my problem is. And, like, we talked about, you know, if they knew they wanted him in this position, he was rehired last July, you couldn't have done something with him? You know?
It is kind of baffling, unless that's supposed to be the story. And, you know, I mean, the fact that he came from nowhere and doesn't deserve it and all of that, like...
When you listen to him on Talk as Jericho, he talks about, you know, Vince wants him to be the heel from India, and I think that's the problem.
I think that's the biggest problem for him. Why I think that if he were actually, like, a proper heel, like an actual proper villain, or, I mean, even if he were a babyface, if he were the babyface from India, I think this would work even better. I mean, not the whole situation with having two lackeys who are the only reason he's the champion. I think that's where... I think there are two stories going on at once, and they don't fit together very well, which is the problem for me.
Now, somebody did suggest, and I apologize to whoever brought this up, somebody, and I assume that they had been smashed with a blunt object to the head repeatedly before they tweeted this to me. Somebody said that maybe it would have been better if they'd brought in Mahabali Shearer from TNA.
I've only seen Mahabali Shearer, I think, once, and so maybe, I really can't say if it would be better or worse.
Maybe if the opportunity to not watch three donkeys have group sex in the ring was not available, then maybe Mahabali Shearer would be a welcome replacement to that.
Is he really bad? I don't know.
Oh my god. He's fucking atrocious. And I do want to say, just to clarify, on Saturday night, Robert and I were watching TakeOver, and Robert mocked what he thought the Indian celebration would be to Jinder Mahal winning the title, and he was fucking spot on. The exact dance.
That's kind of amazing, actually. I'm really bummed I wasn't there to witness this in person.
Yes, that's pretty much it for us here on the SmackDown Summary. Thumb, where is your thumb this week, Sandra?
Thumb's in the middle. Some of the stuff just seems to be business as usual and not all that interesting. I mean, just announcing the Money in the Bank participants. I think the match is going to be really good, but it just seemed kind of anticlimactic just announcing them. The women's stuff leaves me cold and kind of angry at how much of a story there isn't right now in the women's division, but the fashion files and the tag stuff really brought this up for me, and I did really love the Jinder Mahal celebration overall.
I'm also thumbs in the middle. I think my issue is more that, like, the thing I always liked about SmackDown is it kind of was the land of opportunity, but now they keep saying it, which makes it less genuine.
Well, and I think Kevin Owens has a point that it's the land of opportunity when they want to give you an opportunity. But, you know, what about Ty Dillinger in the Money in the Bank match? Why didn't he get an opportunity to be in it? I'm not saying he necessarily should have been, but I'm saying, why didn't he get an opportunity when he put his name in the hat for it? It's interesting because, I mean, he wasn't even on the show. He did get the win on the pre-show. So, I mean, he has a victory. Baron Corbin and Dolph Ziggler and all of them lost at the pay-per-view. Like, where are American Alpha? Where's Randy Orton this week? Where, like, why is some of this stuff happening? I just want explanations and I want more of a story.
As do I. My thumb's in the middle as well, for sure. I do just want to make a very quick note that there was a very funny Twitter exchange where NXT had tweeted out, you can call Nikki Cross crazy, but that was a great move when she did that kind of thing against the apron at TakeOver. And Asuka responded by saying, I'm fed up with her. And then Nikki Cross wrote, ha 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 ha, that moment made my night, hashtag sanity. And Asuka tweeted back saying, you are bugging me. Asuka is now officially defeated Bill Goldberg's streak. She is now the longest reigning streak in WWE history. And
I saw her tweet something about how much she respects Goldberg and how she's so proud to be the champion that has the longest undefeated streak.
Yeah, she tweeted out saying, I respect Goldberg so much. He is amazing. I'm honored to be the undefeated champion with the longest streak in WWE history. And Bill Goldberg tweeted her back with a sort of, like, you know, hands clasped together saying, the streak is in very good hands. Congratulations.
That's pretty great, actually. It's cool that they're playing it up. I'm glad that they're playing that up with Asuka because I think that makes her a more interesting character. And her cockiness, I think, will be her undoing eventually. I'm very curious to know when that happens.
Mm-hmm. So thanks for checking out the SmackDown Summary this week. We will be back next week with more, and we'll see where things go with Jinder and where things go with Ty Dillinger, American Alpha, people like that who weren't on the show this week, Randy Orton. And is it next week's show? Next week's show should be June 4th, which is going to be in New Orleans, Louisiana. The next time that they're in New Orleans, Sandra and I will be there for WrestleMania weekend.
Yes.
So we'll see what happens there. Sandra, where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. And to hear us talk about Backlash, to hear us talk about Jinder Mahal and all of the other stuff that happened, find us on Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes.
Thanks very much for listening, everyone. And, yeah, Jinder's champ. Randy Orton rematch. At least,
it's not the worst thing in the world.
It's not. It's not. There are worse things.
Like, there are.
What's worse?
I mean,
you
people dying in horrific terrorism explosions is worse than Jinder Mahal as champion.
I meant in wrestling, Sandra, not in life. You can't bring terrorism into this one. It's always your excuse. Always your fucking go-to, terrorism.
It is clearly always my go-to. I'm sure you can find plenty of clips of me being like, terrorism's worse, guys.
I'm just going to start putting
terrorism. Always my talking point.
I'm going to start blurring terrorism over things. So Sandra's like, oh my god, you guys, I love that terrorism. And just see how many things I can get away with it. Anyway, it's 4:08 in the morning because Sandra's laptop was a bitch and I have to be up to 4:08 a.m. So I'm delusional and just keep saying things that don't make sense. Sandra, sign off, please.
Okay, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week and maybe things will be better. I hope so. Bye.
Super good looking, every hair in place, everyone loves this gorgeous face. You can't deny my beauty shot, I'm everything that you are not.